You don't need no notes. Let's go to work.
Aí você aí, não tenta não, cumpai.
I can't help the way you make me feel.
My brother Osi, we are remote, giving the people what they want. The Jason and OC podcast, virtual, like everybody's doing work now. This feels weird, but I'm happy because I miss you, brother.
I'll tell you what feels even weirder to me is looking at you wearing your Giants jersey. You miss the NFL so much. You actually got on a Giants, a J. Bell, Trey to do the podcast. I feel you though, man. I absolutely feel you, man. Looking good, man. You look good. You look fresh. What's going on?
I got a good ride this morning. You know, we do our physical fitness, right? So I rode my bike. Yeah. You probably did your VersaClimber machine.
I didn't work out this morning. I did not.
Why not?
I did not. I'll tell you why I didn't work out this morning. Because every single day I've been working out so hard. And today I woke up and I said, you know, I'm going to put all my energy into this podcast.
Oh, this is scary.
I'm going to put all my emotions, all my feelings into this podcast because the people deserve the very, very best today. And then after this, then I'm going to go work out. It's going to be fun.
All right. This is good. All right, cool. Well, I didn't work out too hard, so don't worry about that. But I wore this jersey especially because you gave it to me.
I did. I absolutely did. You listen, you're a great friend of mine. I had to make sure that the people understood that Trey, J. Bell, was out there getting it done. Jay, this is where the name J. Bell came into effect. In New York, the New York Giants, J. Bell. I'm not going to tell you what me and Sam Madison were doing when we were watching that game. It wasn't good.
All I know is when I got off the plane, that's all I knew was J. Bell, and the rest of the team knew it too. So I appreciate that because my name ran through the locker room for good reasons. For good reasons.
Absolutely.
Because before
Absolutely.
That,
all good,
it
man.
Wasn't that good.
It was touch and go. It was touch and go.
Oh,
yo,
man.
Jason, the world has gone crazy, man. Bro. Who would have ever thought that something that we can't see would shut the entire, the whole world shut down completely by something we cannot see. This coronavirus, COVID-19, what is your boy Trump call? Well, we're not even going to say what Trump calls
it. No, we're not.
But just, it has been crazy. How have you been, man?
It has been crazy. And I guess the only person who kind of predicted it in his TED talk was Bill Gates when he spoke about this being a risk that the world would have to be aware of. But yeah, you know, it's funny. It's in times, it's so much uncertainty, right? And, you know, you're reevaluating a lot of things personally, how you think about what, you know, you have going on and the world, leaders, you know, voices. And I try to make parallels to sports because I learned so much in sports. And the one thing is, you know, as athletes, we always had a level of uncertainty, right? It was like whether a guy like me, it was, man, I could get hurt. Not only could I get hurt, I could get cut. My economic situation can change immediately. And it doesn't make it, it's still difficult to deal with when you're in it, but you kind of get these steps you can take and people are going through it with you that you go, you deal with the uncertainty. It doesn't make it any easier, but you deal with it. And I think the world now is having to be thrust in that situation where they're starting to find solutions that they can use for their personal life to deal with this. And as challenging as it is, it pushes you and it gives you tools that you can go on and use in the future. And that's the positive thing that you have to take out of this. Because a lot of other stuff sucks, especially if you look at the news and dive into reading everything you can like we do.
Absolutely, man. You know, the thing that really I would say really, really concerns me is the way a lot of people are going to have to deal with what's going on. And here's why I say that. Especially in countries like Nigeria, all these third world countries that are actually developing, right? Over here, the United States is doing a $2 trillion stimulus package and all these different things. The developed world, they have things to kind of cope with the situation. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be difficult for a lot of people, but at least there's some help. Now, you go to a place like Nigeria, right, where 90% of the country is already living in poverty, and they literally are dependent on having to go outside every single day to work, for labor, to depend. This is how they feed themselves, right? Now, you tell them to self-isolate, and you shut that whole country down. What is going to happen there? You understand what I'm trying to say? Like,
yes.
How are people who are already struggling to survive, already have no government structures in place, already have no help, you now tell them that the one thing that they could do to provide some level of sustenance for themselves, you now tell them that they can't do this at all? What is going to happen there? Who's going to help them? It's maddening. It's frustrating. And the worst part about that is, J-Bell, there's no answers.
There
are no answers.
There's no, but you make a great point, right? And this is why, as people, as humans, we need each other. Because in this pandemic, in this crisis, this affects us all. So now, whatever your economic status is, you need to help everyone, because everyone eventually helps you. It keeps this engine running. So these mm-hmm. people that live hand to mouth, right? That you mm-hmm. might see on TV and you say, oh man, I feel sorry for them, you know, wow. And then it's over. No.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't help each other, this doesn't stop. So from a human standpoint, you start to look, and as we come out of this, I hope we realize as a world that, listen, we all need each other. Let's not be selfish. Let's understand that our situation is ours, and I get it, you're in it, but the world has different things going on we need to be aware of. And if we just think of that and we have that empathy, even if we don't have the solution, but just having that allows us to put ourselves in other people's position and maybe hopefully make decisions in the future that can help us all, because we're going to need each other again.
Mm. Let me ask you something, man. I think maybe after I ask you this question, we're going to get into the different governments' responses to COVID-19 and the things that they've done. But let me ask you something, because once the initial report came out, there were a lot of people who went out, they were hoarding food, buying toilet paper, you know, buying all these different things, right? And, you know, on my Twitter feed, because that's the first thing I do every morning, I just look through my Twitter feed to see the news. That's where I get my information from, my news. You know, there's a lot of people, you know, bashing these people who are doing that. They were like, oh, if you'd only, you know, buy one or two, there'd be enough for everybody. I'm going to my grocery store and there's nothing in there and all these things. And they're 100% correct in saying that, right? But then I started to think to myself, I was like, what is the difference, right, between somebody who hoards toilet paper and somebody who hoards millions of dollars or billions of dollars? What's the difference? Is there a difference between somebody who does that and some? Okay, you're not going to be able to use 1,000 rolls of toilet paper. Cool. Are you going to be able to spend realistically $5-10 billion? Why should somebody be allowed to hoard all that money, but then you turn around and point the finger at somebody who's doing the exact same thing, but within their means? If you understand what I'm trying to say,
I do.
It's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
There's literally no difference between the two. So before we start pointing the finger at these people and, you know, getting angry and getting mad, I think we need to take a broader look and see that in some form or fashion, this is kind of the way the world works, no?
Yes, I agree. And, I make no... I always am very clear that I love economics and the behavioral side of it. Like, why do people do things? And this is a perfect case study, is people go out and buy things like toilet paper and things of that nature, because it gives you a sense of control in uncertainty. Like, I'm so uncertain, but I'm certain I can buy this toilet paper, and people are buying it too, so it must be the right move. And I can do that from a cost perspective because it's somewhat affordable, right? So I'm taking an action, which makes me feel better, and I can actually afford this action. Because it's the same way with people with millions and billions of dollars in the market, moving money around to cash. Because, man, I know I should, you know, I should ride this wave or whatever, but let me move out for safety because I can. Or let me buy because I can. Everybody does what's in their means and what's in their reach. And let's never forget that and understand that, because that's, we're humans. We want to protect and take care of our family.
There's enough money for everybody. If certain individuals wouldn't hoard tens and hundreds of billions of dollars, it's the exact same thing. There's enough money for everybody. There's enough toilet paper for everybody.
Right.
There's enough canned goods for everybody.
Yeah.
There's enough. But people will always be greedy, man. So let's keep that in mind before we start criticizing people, man. Now, the next thing I wanted to ask you about, J-Bell.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about the responses of the governments to this COVID-19? The UK government, the American government, the Chinese government. What is your feeling of the responses?
I've definitely focused more on the U.S., though I'm in the U.K., and that tells you who I have more trust in right about now.
Right.
I'm here, right? I'm in London, and my move now, my family's here, but my move was like, you know what? I just felt better about being here for whatever reason. You know, there's so many thoughts on that question you just asked me, but I want to kind of redirect it towards this. There's a book I read a long time ago. It's called The Speed of Trust. And it was about, you know, corporations and how you need to build this trust, because in times of uncertainty, when things got to move fast, when you got to take advantage of something, there needs to be trust, right? Because think about it. I've been in situations, literally, the heat's on. I'll be honest, because these are our people. We've been in interviews, and topics have been hot. And I've looked at you, and I'm like, OC, we got a rapport. I trust you. Let me know how we're going to do this. Let me know how we're going to handle this in the heat of the battle. So whatever you direct me, I went with because of trust. Years of trust.
Yeah.
Okay? And I didn't have, we don't have time to figure it out. We got to go. Now, the problem is, especially I look at the U.S., is when your central figures, your leaders, you don't have a lot of trust in them. You don't have a lot of trust in what they say. How are you going to react fast? When I look at what they've done and the moves they've made as a government, I think we're late to the party. So I look at things like what people, like in the States, in Florida, where people were out on the beach for spring break. Because the message, you know, it wasn't clear. And then when the narrative changes, what do you trust? You just told me something the other day. I'm not sure what to trust. The same thing here. When you change directions quickly, it's about, do I trust you? Do I trust what you're telling me? And I think this shows you what the importance is with leadership. You need to trust your leaders. They need to be honest. They need to be trustworthy, but in a way where they've earned it. You know, they've earned your trust. What do you think about that? Because I mean, we always talk about leadership, and we really focus in on that, because that's a big thing in sports. When we talk about these teams, we talk about who has the advantage. We talk about leadership, and we talk about how that's earned. And I just see the lack of leadership, or real leaders now might stand up and take over, because you have to trust the narrator at points like these.
You're correct. Okay. Okay. So, I'm going to look at it from a UK standpoint.
Yes.
Okay? I'm going to look at it from the UK standpoint. So, initially, when the United Kingdom's government responded, their initial response was kind of lackadaisical. It was almost a laissez-faire, oh, we're going to just...
herd immunity.
Develop herd immunity, and we're going to let the disease affect the healthy. And it seemed a little off in regards to what everybody else was doing, right? I said it seemed a little off in regards to what everybody else was doing. The Chinese government, the Spanish government, the Italians were late, the Germans, the, you know, Norwegians, all these different countries, they went into lockdown. The UK was like, no. Here's the thing about that, J-Bell. A lot of people are probably going to be upset with me for saying this.
Okay.
A lot of people are going to be upset with me for saying this. Here's the thing. From a logical standpoint, I'm speaking pure logic. If this decision was left to a computer with no emotions, they might have actually been doing the right thing from a logical standpoint.
Okay.
And here's why I say that. This disease, the way we know it, or this virus, the way we know it right now, is it works like nothing people have really ever seen, right? In the sense that right now, Jason, you could have it.
Mm-hmm.
I could have it. Simon, Chris, everybody, a bunch of people could have this disease or this virus showing no symptoms, and we're just going to be transporting or transferring this thing to other people without knowing it. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
So in order to really get this thing under control, and I mean eradicate this, what the United Kingdom government would have to do, or what any government would have to do, there's, what, 70 million people here? You would literally have to get a test for all 70 million people, find out who has the disease or who has the virus, and isolate them. That is the only way to truly, truly eradicate this disease. Otherwise,
and close your borders.
Going to self and close your borders. No, that's the only way to do it. Otherwise, what's going to happen is people are going to exhibit no symptoms. Okay, you self-isolate for a while. You come out of self-isolation. And you're still spreading the disease. So every time this thing pops up, what are you going to do? Are you going to quarantine yourself again every single time this thing comes up? You can't do that. So what they said was, oh, if we know that all these people can have this virus and nobody really knows, and we're going to continue to just spread this virus unchecked, no matter what you do, people are going to continue to have this, why not just allow everybody to get this virus and then, you know, see what happens. Now, what they didn't take into account is we are not machines, J-Bell. We are not computers. We have emotions.
Yes, we do.
My father is 80 years old. I don't want to see him die. I want him to continue to live no matter what. What they essentially were saying was, we're just going to, if they die, they die. They're old anyway. That's exactly what they were basically putting out there. And that, from an emotional standpoint, as from a human standpoint, was terrible. But from a logical standpoint, it makes complete sense. Because how are we literally going to bring you? We're in isolation right now. I got my kids downstairs and I'm going crazy. I'm going nuts. Nobody know how much longer are you going to be able to do this for? How much longer? And what if we have to keep on going in the quarantine? It's impossible. The economy is crashing. Nothing is working. Nothing is moving. This is going to be a disaster if they don't come up with something quick. There's no vaccination on site. It's going to take another year and a half for them to really have a real vaccine for this, because they have to test the vaccination.
Right.
So for the next year and a half, are we going to continue to go into quarantine every single time this thing pops up? What are you supposed to do? And that is the problem. You can't make a logical decision because people are going to die. You can't make a decision based on emotion, because if you do that, you're going to crash your economy and people are going to have to keep going into quarantine. So it's a very, very bad situation. And as much as, you know, I hate to not side with them, but I have to say that I kind of understand what they were trying to do when they initially set out.
Well, you got to think about governments. They got to think about business, right? That's what keeps it going, the economy, especially when you talk about the U.S. and U.K. economy. It's based on consumers, right? That's one of the biggest drivers. Mm-hmm. But you said something that you really kind of cleared up my thoughts when I was listening to you. And this will be the new norm, right? Because this thing and understanding disease, I'm reading a book on the Spanish flu, which didn't start in Spain, by the way, OC. Anyways, that's a whole different thing. But there's a lot of parallels, right? And there's a lot of things that we as a world have learned from that. But I will say this, if this is the new norm, right? Because this thing can change, mutate, all kind of stuff that is way above my way of thinking. What do they call them? Epidemiologists? Did I say that right, OC?
Epidemiologists. Woo! Yeah, you did. Good job. It's very nice. Very well done.
You know the struggle's real for me.
Yeah. But the thing, you didn't have to read it. It was already in your head. If you had to read it,
then I'd have butchered it.
Where the problem is.
Well, I would have just handed it to you because I trust you.
Trust my eyes.
I trust your eyes. But that being said, so, okay, if we do have to make moves quickly, right? We know if there is a level of containment early on, you can figure things out and then use all these protocols you have in place. But once again, my narrative is it's the trust factor. The population needs to trust the voices. If we trust the voices and we know, hey, we're ready for this. This makes sense. We're together. We're one. Let's band together and figure this out. If we trust where we're hearing this from, we can move faster. And as these things occur, it will shorten as far as time is concerned, and we can get back to our normal lives. But we're going to have to repeat this. It's all about now. I think this is going to force the hand of our future leaders. You have to be real with your population and tell them, the people that you supposedly represent, the truth.
I hear you, man. Crazy, crazy times.
Crazy
times. Crazy times, but at least we're healthy. And oh my God, for everybody out there who's not.
I know, man.
Prayers are with you, man.
I know.
It's nuts, man. What's the big news that happened in the NFL this year?
There's a lot, man.
This week or so.
Do you feel guilty sometimes because, like, we're having this discussion and you know, truth be told, I called you yesterday because I needed to just talk to you about the world for a while. And you picked up my call. Yeah. So thank you. And
that's how bored I was. I was like, oh, there's Jason. Hey, Jason. How are you, JL?
Oh, my God.
Hey, how are you? I picked in the first ring. Yeah.
You never pick him on the first ring. Oh, my God. This is so true. It's so sad. Oh my gosh. He said, hey, J-Bell, what's going on?
Hey, did you hear the excitement in my voice? J-Bell.
You usually pick up and be go, this is what you usually go and be like, what happened?
What's up, man? What happened? Because usually when you call me something has happened about what happened, Jason.
Oh, my God. Oh, this is funny. But, yes, I don't even know what I was talking about. But, yeah, I think I feel a little guilty sometimes because I'm excited about what's happening in the NFL. You know, I want to be. This is the offseason is cool. Like, it's a lot of moves being made. You see what teams are doing and you get a beat on next year. As long as I've been in football, I've never seen anything in free agency happen like this besides Peyton Manning. But that was different because he had the injury that got him out of Indianapolis. But this Tom Brady free agency move to Tampa Bay is... I'm telling you, we're in the media, so we're looking for things. Man, we have so many stories for this year. So many different ways to look at the game of football in the NFL. So many narratives. I mean, we really get to answer so many questions. I mean, it's unbelievable. I'm excited to see it play out this year.
Yeah. Okay, so Tom signed with Tampa Bay. Now, from the outside looking in, I'll say this. It was a good move. If you look at the coaching staff of Tampa Bay, Bruce Arians known for being a fantastic quarterback coach.
Yes.
Very good offense. You saw what Jameis Winston did down there. If he wouldn't have thrown 30 interceptions, we'd be talking about him as having an MVP season.
True.
He was balling.
True.
Right? Plugging a Tom Brady in there, the sky's the limit for that football team. Defensively, they re-signed Barrett. They re-signed JPP. Todd Bowles, outstanding defensive coordinator.
And they got Sue. Sue just signed.
It's a ready-made football team for him, right? But here's what I'll say to Tom Brady. And I don't know. He might listen. He might be listening to our podcast. I don't know. He might be. Maybe. Everybody's got time. And over the last, I would say, couple of years, I'll say maybe 5, 6, 7 years, I've really started to really like Tom Brady. Like, I like the way he carries himself. I like the way he conducts himself. I like him as a player. I used to hate him before because, you know, obviously we played against him. I remember specifically the time I really stopped liking him was that we were about to play them in the Super Bowl, and I think Plaxico had said the Giants were going to win 21-17, and he had this look on his face. He was like, hey, we're only going to score 17 points. And they ended up only scoring 14. But the minute he said that, because prior to then, I had no problems with Brady. Mm-hmm. But the minute he said that, I stopped liking him right then and there. You know, I felt that, you know, he didn't have to behave like that. But then over the past couple of years, I've really started to enjoy him. You know, I like him.
So I'm going to give him a little bit of advice. See, the thing about switching teams at this point in your career, is something I've done.
Yes, you have.
It's something I've done. I cemented my legacy with the New York Giants, and I eventually ended with the Atlanta Falcons, right? I felt like I had something to prove. That was my feeling. Everything I did was with the Giants, and I feel like I could, you know, carry a football team by myself and all that good stuff.
It turns out that I couldn't do it, right? And I spent at a time where I probably could have done it, earlier in my career, I was with the New York Giants. So later on in my career, I was with the Atlanta Falcons, and I wasn't able to carry that defensive line the way that I thought I would be able to do. Now, here's the thing that Tom has to understand is when you're in a situation like he's been in a situation with the New England Patriots, his legacy is cemented. He is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. When everybody thinks about Tom Brady, they're going to think about his 6 Super Bowl championships with the New England Patriots. There's nothing he can do at this point that's going to top what he's already done. No matter what he does in Tampa Bay, there's nothing he can do. Going into this Tampa Bay situation for him, if he's going to be successful, and this goes for anybody who's played the game at a high level for a long period of time, and they're making the switch, he has to truly love the game of football, J-Bell. Truly love the game of football. Not what football does for you, not the fanfare, not anything. He has to truly love the game itself. Every day, J-Bell, even right now, I got in a Barcelona jersey, right? If I could play soccer every day, I would. I love soccer. Like,
I love
soccer. As a matter of fact, I pay to play soccer. Like, I pay. You understand what I'm trying to say? This is the level later on in your life, if you're going to be successful, this is the level of love for sports you have to have, especially in the NFL.
True.
Tom Brady, if Tampa Bay said they're not going to pay you a dime, if Tampa Bay said, listen, you're going to have to come out, matter of fact, you're going to have to give us some money. You're going to practice every day. You're going to put on your pads. You're going to have to go out there and grind. There's going to be no fans in the stadium, nothing. Would you still go out there and play? If the answer is yes, play out there until you die, Tom. Play until they carry you off the field. If the answer is no, it's time for you to walk away.
Well, we know he's not walking away. Oh, let it go. Let it go. Let it go.
Oh, my God. In my attack on Tom Brady, I swallowed down the wrong pipe. That's what they call it. And now I'm coughing. Go ahead, man.
Oh, man. You see what happens? Tom got people everywhere.
He got people everywhere.
Is that a new water bottle you have? You know, you don't...
No, something.
You only buy a water bottle once every 7 to 8 months.
J-Bell, I'm buying all kinds of stuff, man. Everything on Amazon. Jeff Bezos is going to be a trillionaire by the time this whole thing is over.
Listen, he is winning. I tell you what, Whole Foods is stocked up.
Stocked up.
But to your point, you make some good points. And I do believe that Tom Brady has some serious love for the game. What I will say is this, and it goes back to what you did and when you went to Atlanta. And I just remember it. I've said it before. I remember going to the game and players coming up to you and telling you, we went to do the game live and describing to you how they copied things you had done and how it worked and it was helping them have success in their career. Mm. What I think about, when I think about Tom Brady's and how he can be successful in this move, there's a couple of ways. He's finally going to be able to be himself. He's finally going to be able to get out of the Patriot way shell, okay? So we are going to get a glimpse of that. That's cool to me. But it's what you do in that locker room to other people and how they buy into the person you are, the way you work, and the things you do. Because we find out quickly if you are for real or you're a fraud. And Tom Brady has proven he's all about his game. But the impact he's going to have on that locker room and how that team changes and how they play is going to show me the success he's having. Now, I don't know how that's going to pan out this year. I think they'll be successful in many ways. But say he just changes the way this team does business. They, as a business, they've already gotten better. I mean, if that team was worth $1 billion, it definitely went up $100 million when Tom Brady signed up, or $200 million. So you pay him 50 and you just made another 150 in profit, million. Mm-hmm. That happened for real. Let's see, can he do that in that locker room? That's the magic. You did that. You can say what you want about how you wanted to do on the field, but people watched you.
Jason, fair. That is a very, very fair and a very valid point. Yeah? But this is his impact on other people. Mm. I'm talking about himself.
Yeah.
What is his reason for going out there and playing? What is it? Is it for the love, the pure love of the game?
Competition.
Or is it you have something to prove, or you feel like you have something to prove, or you want to show the Patriots that it was you and not them? What is your reason for wanting to continue to play the game?
I think I, okay. And I'll answer that directly without doing a classic J Bell in a big circle.
Good.
if he goes and pulls this off, OC, he is the greatest quarterback ever.
Yes.
He might be the greatest player ever.
Good. Now, here's
my
point.
If he pulls this off.
If he pulls it off, Jason, you are
100% correct. 100%. There's no debating it if he pulls it off. But the question is, why did he do it? If he went specifically to try to prove that, Jason, I guarantee you he's going to fail. Guaranteed. This is another one of my things that I say months before anybody else that is going to come to fruition.
Ooh. Oh.
I guarantee failure. If he went because he just loves the game and he wants to continue to play until he can't play anymore, he loves the camaraderie, he loves the way football works. If he went for that reason, he is going to be successful. And Tampa Bay is going to win a Super Bowl. But he's the only one who can answer that question deep down inside. That's why I said, if he's listening, I want him to actually take a minute, reflect on that, for the love of the game, just the pure joy, the pure love of going out there with your teammates. He's going to be successful. And if he went to prove something, to everybody else, something he's already proved, he's going to fall flat on his face, J-Bell.
You make a good point. So what I do think is this. Remember who his competition truly when he was coming up? Peyton Manning, right? Those two. And I always think if you look at the way Peyton was and the input he had, personnel, what he wanted to do. I mean, he was running things in Indianapolis. We know Tom Brady was not running things in New England, and he caught as much heat as anybody else. You weren't calling out Peyton Manning in Indianapolis. I know players that played there. I mean, he ran the show. But yet Belichick can come in and go so hard at Brady where he's literally putting fear in the rest of the team. At some point, if you're Tom Brady, are you just tired of that? A man who walked out of a meeting. Are you tired of that?
Of course you are.
Okay.
Of course. I want to talk about Peyton Manning, though.
Jason. Okay. Okay.
I want to talk about Peyton Manning. I guarantee you Peyton Manning didn't go to the Denver Broncos because he felt he had something to prove. I guarantee you Peyton just loved football. He just wanted to keep playing. He just wanted to keep playing until his neck was like, hey, bro, you can't do this no more.
Till that arm started.
He couldn't even throw no more.
He really couldn't throw. Like, he won a Super Bowl and couldn't throw an out.
But he loved the game. He loved it. He couldn't live without it. He couldn't live without football. He was like, oh, I got to keep playing. And this is why he was still successful.
You question Brady's love, really?
I'm not questioning it.
I don't at all.
I'm not questioning his love because I don't know him on that level.
Because this is why I said earlier, this is so dope for the media. We can, it's so many narratives. You and I always look at different things. We're going to look at the players. We're going to look at the locker room. We're going to go out there and get our feelers out and see how people are responding to him, to what he's putting out there. Because we know, man, you can't fool players. You cannot fool them. So if he's doing it and he's all about the love of the game, you know, helping his teammates, you know, finding a way, common ground, you're going to see it because they're going to respond. They're going to respond. I have something on free agency, and there's a lot of other moves, but I just want to throw one out on you that I think is very interesting to me, and I really, really want to watch this. I am super excited for this, as much as I am Tom Brady. Okay, there's a lot of moves. I mean, you would think maybe I would talk about trades and stuff like that. No, OC. I'm talking about Cam Newton. I'm talking about Cam Newton. If there's a couple of teams, we can get into that. Cam Newton is 2-0 against the Patriots. There's no other quarterback like that. What the Chargers are trying to do and the offense that they want to run, who better than a Cam Newton? Cam Newton is the most physical running quarterback I have ever seen. And yeah, he gets hurt. But you know what? He's only 30. We're sitting here talking about a guy who's 45. Or 40. I mean, he's 40. He's trying to play till he's 45. But Tom Brady. If Cam Newton goes, and there's two teams I think that he should go to, and he just turns it on this year, and he plays like he did, what was it, 2015 he won the MVP? I think. And he just goes out there. We see what Lamar Jackson has done. And you tailor our offense around what he does, especially the way it is now. You know, quick ball distribution. He's a power thrower. He's what they're trying to make Josh Allen in Buffalo, right?
Yeah.
And you go out there and you know him by his personality. If he's got something to prove, it's on.
Okay.
I am so excited to see where he goes. And if he's healthy, as I think he is, what he's going to do this year. I will not be surprised if he rips a hole in the NFL. I'm excited.
And you should be. I think everybody should be excited, right? But the pragmatic side of me says, something's off here, man. I smell a rat.
I think I know why you do. I think I know why you do.
When I put into my brain David Tepper, the owner of the Carolina Panthers.
Very smart man.
Incredibly smart, right? He's a numbers guy, right? I put that into account to the fact that Cam Newton's scheduled to make $20 million this year.
Mm-hmm.
For a quarterback is nothing.
Mm-hmm. True. It's a discount.
It's a complete discount right now, right? Mm-hmm. You're talking about a guy who was the MVP. I put David Tepper and I put Cam Newton's, by NFL quarterback standards, low salary, right? And I look at the quarterback situation they have there in Carolina. And I look at the fact that they're not going to have a high draft pick to draft one of those. It doesn't add up to me, J-Bell. Why would they release a guy like
that? I have your answer.
They don't do that in the NFL. They would rather die before they do that. Why would they do that?
I'll tell you why. And you're right. So now I'm saying Cam Newton going somewhere else. I don't think he should have stayed in Carolina. And the reason is Tepper comes in, and anybody that knows him and what he does on Wall Street has always said hi. They've never questioned the way he operates and organizes his thoughts into action, right? Boom. That's whatever else you think. That's it. So he allowed that team to kind of be its own thing when he purchased it, and now he's put his imprint on it. Okay, everything stayed in place before then. He gets a head coach coming out of college who has a way of thinking. So you're going to have a shift in culture into that team. That team in that locker room was ran by Cam Newton. You interviewed McCaffrey. One thing he said, and he's always said about how he loved that Cam made the game fun for him again because he was very serious about it, right? And a guy like that, a guy like Cam is good for him, right? But other guys aren't serious about their business to start with.
Mm.
So, you know, I remember I had guys I knew that played there years ago, and they were like, man, you can't tell these guys anything. And he wasn't talking about Cam. He was talking about other guys, but that were influenced by Cam. So Cam's going to go do what he does, but he is a strong character in the locker room. If you're going to bring in a new identity, I understand why he's got to go. And that's why I'm saying if he goes to a team with an existing identity, he's going to be Cam.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the same Cam as in Carolina where he ran things. And it was nothing against him. I mean, the dude went on the field and put it down. I mean, he wasn't messing around. But when you're trying to change the culture, you got to clean house. And that's the reason they did that. Because economically, from what he was getting paid, you're right. Why not keep him under that deal? But if you have question marks on his health, which he passes physical, but more importantly, you are trying to change the culture and tone in your locker room, you know, you have to change the identity, and some players got to go.
And so they let a young Super Bowl winning, well, not Super Bowl winning, but Super Bowl quarterback who's an MVP just go like that?
Yeah, and you know, and to your point, there's one thing about that does make me question things, and that is Washington didn't even look at him. Ron Rivera didn't even flinch.
And not even a look.
Not even a look in. And you know who else hasn't flinched? Is Gettleman. You know, Gettleman hasn't even flinched. Not saying anything. I mean, when Gettleman first went to New York, it wasn't people that know and have been around. And that's, hey, players, listen, there's coaches and organizations as far as GMs and stuff, they don't have to like you as a player because sometimes, you know, we all know how they can be too. But what I am saying is he's going to have to go somewhere like maybe New England where the culture is what it is. Or Miami?
I find it, I find that to be...
Or the Chargers, I'm just saying.
Fascinating. I find New England to be a very fascinating place for Cam Newton. I think if he went there, I think that would be tough. But I just don't know if his... Because Belichick, oddly enough, Belichick does his research, you know?
Yeah.
It's a certain type of person who he allows into that locker room. That's the one thing you have to understand. He just doesn't let everybody... There have been so many talented players or whatever. He just doesn't let everybody come in there like that, man. And Cam, he's a handful, bro, both on and off the field. He doesn't create any problems off the field at all. You know, he seems to be a really nice guy, intelligent. But I was watching the videos of him on Instagram recently that they posted on Twitter. And, you know, I was just watching and I was like... I don't know if Belichick is going to go for that, man. I just don't know. There are a bunch of teams who should. But I just don't know if they would.
You might be right. And, I mean, this is pure, we're just having a conversation. But if he does, You as a player are buying in. You know what you're getting into. You know what you're walking in when you walk through those doors. And you're doing it for a certain outcome, in his case. Do you want to win a championship? Because if you come here and you listen to me and you do what we say, we're going to put you in a position and this team in a position with your skill set that we can go out here and win some games. That's what people do when they go there. You know?
No question.
Usually they leave because they want to go get their money somewhere else and then they come back.
Yeah. No question. You're right. We'll see how it plays out.
Nothing's happened, but I mean... Think if we get Tom Brady moving to Tampa Bay and Cam Newton goes to New England. Oh, my God. Oh, man. I don't even know focus on.
Imagine if Tampa Bay plays New England.
Oh, gosh. Like, just keep him healthy for a year, man. You know, there's so many things that are happening that aren't happening as fast as usual because of where we are as a world. Another thing, too, I was thinking about, and we kind of talked about this earlier, how difficult the draft's going to be, how hard it's going to be on these kids. And we were talking the other day how you and I wouldn't be in the NFL if we weren't able to do our workouts at our university, which... Players aren't really able to do their videotaping it and sending them out, but there's no scouts on the road. There's nobody looking at you. You went, performed, your life changed. You go on the world tour, you know, countrywide tour, and you're visiting every team, right? And they're getting caught up, interviewing you, all that kind of stuff, which was necessary for you to go so high in the draft like you did. Those opportunities wouldn't exist in this environment. Say, for me, I was coming off an injury, so I couldn't do the combine, so I needed that time to get ready. Guys like us maybe would have got a shot. I don't know. Wouldn't have been the same.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at it from that standpoint, but also this year in the league, OC, I think it's going to be a veteran year in the league because how are these young guys going to make it? They're not going to get the opportunities.
They can't develop. Yeah, it's going to be really tough for them. It's just... This is a trickle down effect, man. It's going to trickle all the way down to, you know, the NFL like that, NBA, all these different sports leagues, all the people who previously would have had an opportunity. Very few of them are going to get that opportunity now, man. They're going to have to come in, you know, whether you're a free agent or whatever, they're going to have to come in and just literally blow the doors off of everybody to even get a look. And the chances of them doing that are very, very low because it's, you know, the NFL is such a different game than college. So it's just, man, this thing messed a lot of things up for a lot of people, man. There's literally probably right now a superstar.
Yeah.
Who's actually not going to make it to the NFL. A superstar.
For sure.
Who's not going to make it because of what just took place with this virus, man. It's unfortunate, man, but
for sure.
All we can do is keep praying.
For Yes, for sure. One other thing about that too is this: there is an opportunity for people that are truly self-motivated and grind. And you're gonna, you understand this, right? It's what you do. What do you do good when nobody's watching, right? We know that's what makes you great. I mean, that's what makes players great. I remember coming in after practice. I remember looking at you do all those machines, right, in the training room. And I remember Michael Strahan running on a machine after practice. And I thought, we're going to be all right because these are our guys, you know. And they're outworking everybody. I remember Eli Manning spending more time in the film room than anybody. You know, he beat everybody, and second behind him was Antonio Pierce. So, you know, it was just – and nobody saw that. I just saw it because I was late leaving the locker room. But but that being said, you're going to have players on the field, especially this year, the longer this lasts, that are truly self-starters, truly prepare hard, spend the time to get ready – and to get better at their craft.
J-Bell, it was great talking to you, man. It was great giving the people what they want on this podcast, man. It's this was incredible, man. We got to do this more often.
Can we do it again?
Can we do this every day? No?
Man, Simon, make sure you give us some uprise right now. We need... Simon has a mask on. I just saw it. He's trying to prevent.
He has a mask on, dude. Oh, my
OC's
God.
Coughing.
This is horrible.
OC's coughing through.
Oh, no. He's got a mask on. You can't catch the virus through my iPad. This guy's unbelievable.
Oh, man. That's it for us, man. It's been a long one. I could. Oh, my gosh. Chris is putting on. Oh, he's sanitizing his hands. These guys are prepared, man. You know what? I got to tell you, man, these guys know what they're doing. Holler at the Uprise. New videos coming out. I'm following. There's some music videos coming out.
On the 29th on Sunday. On Sunday. Check it out. Grace Rose.
Yes, I saw it. I'm ready, man. And let's do this again. Hit us up on Twitter. Let us know what you want us to talk about. Holler at y'all. Uprise.
Especially when it's tongue in cheek. 'Cause we're young and free. There's a place for you and me. And now's the moment. You just gotta take your chance. Boy, you might explore if you get close. We're going.